and welcome to Not the Special Edition, episode 32. We're the internet's very own limousine riding, jet flying, kiss stealing son of a podcast that can't smell what The Rock is cooking due to ongoing concussion issues. I'm Miles, otherwise known as the Execution of Ignorance, and I'm here with a man who doesn't take his vitamins or say his prayers, but he is a massive racist. It's Kit.
Hello.
Hello. We're doing an all-wrestling special to the enjoyment of no one but ourselves.
This is... We won't feel bad, dear listeners, if you don't want to listen to this one, because it is essentially just us spewing our love into the air.
Yeah, grappling men in Lycra.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Welcome to the show. So why wrestling? Why, Kit? Why are we doing a wrestling spesh?
I can tell you exactly why.
Go for it. I wish you would.
On an earlier episode of the podcast, this is quite a while ago, you made reference to the fact that you'd got the 1 free month of the WWE Network.
Yeah.
And I mocked you for it. And, well, didn't that come back to bite me on the ass? Because that one incident piqued my curiosity and... I went back and revisited a few of the old things that I used to watch when I was a teenager. Before I knew it, I'm there watching all the wrestling.
Yeah, you can leave the ring, but the ring never leaves you. It's so true. Like, we both got into wrestling as children, obviously, like most people do.
Yeah.
And then they leave it when they reach a certain maturity, as we did. But there is always that interest. I am beguiled and bedazzled by its grand OTT. It is mindless entertainment. As the great John Ross says, it's mindless entertainment, and I love it for that. It's roided panto. Sorry, you want to say something?
Who's John Ross?
JR, sorry.
Jim Ross.
Jim Ross.
Don't get that wrong.
We've been out of the game for a bit. I've literally written John Ross down as well. Scruffing that out. Yeah, it's Grand Guignol, it's vaudeville, it's carnival, it's sport with storylines, and it's astonishing, and we love it. Mm. So it's back, and plus Royal Rumble's coming up, 25th anniversary of Raw coming up.
Oh yeah!
So what a great time to, I don't know, get back into the older tights.
Yes,
as they say,
get the tights out. Incidentally, if you were a wrestler, what attire would you go for?
Oh, I've already done my wrestler on WWE 2K15, I think, because I'm too tight to buy the new one.
Yeah.
And he's wearing, because purple's my favourite colour.
Yeah.
He's wearing purple. It's quite satiny, a bit sexy. Just trousers.
Okay.
Trousers, not shorts.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want shorts, because they're just, like, I wear swimming trunks because I go swimming, I don't want to wear. And I'd wear, like, a blazer.
Yeah.
But with my top off. Yeah. That makes any sense, you know. Like
blazer with the top off, yeah.
Blazer with top off, matching trousers, come out there.
Yeah.
Don't know what my entrance theme would be yet. Maybe something mad like Belle and Sebastian to confuse everyone.
I always like entrances like that. They're a bit odd, a bit quirky.
Yeah?
Yeah, go for it.
What do you think of Titus O'Neil? What do you think of his...
I didn't actually see what his entrance was.
It's like... It's rubbish. It's really weak and pathetic.
No, I hadn't seen that. I am particularly enjoying Dolph Ziggler's entrance at the moment, where they start his music and then turn it off, and he walks out to silence.
With a record scratch.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I quite like that.
It's alright.
Okay.
Okay, so we love wrestling. I've got some feedback from some of the people who listen to the podcast and what they think of wrestling. It's not all positive, as you might have imagined. We're going to go over our favourite matches, our fave wrestlers, and fave other things and stuff. Should we just tackle, first of all, the thing that everyone brings up, and it's brought up in the feedback, the fake aspect, the predetermined aspect?
Yes.
Okay. We know, okay?
Yeah.
We know. I still get people look at me like when it somehow comes up, I'm like booking an event, or I'm just quickly sneaking a look at it at work, something like that, and so we're like, you like wrestling? And they give me that sort of pitiful look.
Mm.
And then they do that thing where they look at me, and I can see it in their eyes, they're thinking, does he know?
Yeah.
And they're going, it is fake, isn't it? And you can tell, they're not checking with me that it's fake, they're checking that I know it's fake. And we're like, at what point did you think I believed Kane can make fire appear from the corners of the ring posts.
It's that thing. There's a brilliant film. I would advise anyone to, not just wrestling fans, although wrestling fans will particularly enjoy it because of all the references, but there's a film on YouTube called Wrestling Isn't Wrestling, directed by Max Landis, who is the son of John Landis.
Yeah, he's in a bit of hot water at the moment.
Oh, is he?
Skip over that.
Oh, sorry. I don't know what's happened to him.
Well, anyone with a penis in Hollywood is being accused of stuff,
right, okay,
including him. But it is really good still, well, nonetheless. Get that in your mind. Come on, you probably still watch Woody Allen films, so watch that as well.
Yeah, it's really good. And what you've just said, there's a bit in it where he says, does anyone really think that The Undertaker is supposedly an undead wizard who inexplicably spends his time participating in wrestling matches? Yeah, it's pure, it's theatre, it's pantomime, it's... Absolutely. And again, like as we've discussed before, why, when you go to the cinema to watch a film, you know that's not real. So why is that any different?
Yeah. I think it's much more fascinating than real sport because you get to see it through the prism of writing and booking and conjecture and just guessing who's going to be pushed as a star, who's going to win the next match, who do the writers have faith in, who does the head of the company think is going to be the next talent to sort of take the company to the next level. I love all that. Who do you think is going to go over? Who do you think is going to... You know, not as good. I think that's fascinating. And when the writers can pull the rug from under our eyes and, you know, completely surprise us and take us by shock, that's when wrestling really works and it does the things you don't expect to do. That's why it's just as good as any fiction. It's not quite as good as any fiction, but it sort of is.
It's so much more than who's going to win this match, who's going to, you know, it's that almost becomes inconsequential to the sort of greater... I mean, it doesn't, but, you know, the as I say, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of sport, but as I see it, as I understand it, the most important thing in any given, you know, say tournament is who wins. But that's not the most important thing in the equivalent of a, you know, wrestling.
So you're with Jim Ross, who of course says that wins and losses don't matter. I don't necessarily completely agree with that. Look at the Undertaker streak, look at Brock Lesnar's undefeated sort of run. But he does have a point in that, yeah, you're right, it's more about storylines, it's more about how they come off. You can have someone lose a match and still come off like $1 million at the end of the match and look amazing and wonderful and garner respect from the audience for their participation. Because again, we know and we appreciate the effort and the athleticism and frankly the danger they put themselves in, you know, during that match. Fantastic stuff.
Okay, well, what should we tackle first? I don't know.
Well, let's move on to our favourite wrestlers.
Okay.
Sting.
Do you know what? I think there probably are quite a lot of people out there who Sting is their favourite wrestler. No, I'm not even joking, like, because there's still loads
of people. I didn't mean that, I meant...
Oh, right, okay.
Did you think I meant Sting the wrestler?
I thought you were talking about that.
No, I meant put Sting in here, Miles.
Okay.
Then cut it. Right. The next...
I found it very difficult to choose my third favourite wrestler because I was fairly confident as to who my top two were.
Mm-hmm.
But the third took ages because it was... You know, there's a lot of wrestlers that I like for different reasons, but I brought it down to number three is Shawn Michaels.
Okay, fantastic.
And the reason being, I think, is just regardless of what sort of state of mind he was in, because it is... It's hugely talked about that before his injury, he had various issues with, mindset or maybe substances, whatever, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
His dedication to, and not just wrestling in general, but in particular, you know, the WWF as it was then, was second to none. He gave it his all, even when it was in a situation where, you know, he didn't appear to care that much. As soon as he actually stepped into the ring, he then became that consummate performer.
Yeah,
his moveset, his in-ring ability, brilliant. And he managed to... He was one of those rare people that has got a very, very wide skill set, but also could deliver a character and a story in the ring.
I agree completely. He's not my number two, so I'm going to take my opportunity to talk about him now.
Okay.
Yeah, he's charisma to the absolute max. And like you say, in the ring, he's just so crisp. He's astonishing. He bounds around. The energy is just... People think that, you know, wrestling is, well, it's a bunch of fake stuff, and they do, and things like that. No, like, I was listening to a podcast once, and these people went on wrestling training, and they said the main thing is, and if you've seen the Louis Theroux documentary, the main thing for a wrestler is cardio. It's just, it's so important to have those levels of fitness and athleticism where you just can't stop. And he manages to go. I mean, he's had that Iron Man match. He just goes and goes and goes, and it's astonishing. And I just love the fact that he's this big, arrogant. I think he works slightly better as a heel, although I still want to cheer him anyway. Yeah, I love him. And just of the variety of matches he's had, even with, you know, someone like The Undertaker, of whom I'm not the biggest fan, I do, you know, recognise what he's done, but his match with The Undertaker at WrestleMania 25, or as they call it, the 25th anniversary, which makes no sense.
Yeah, this has been covered by What Culture quite a lot, but it's not the 25th anniversary. It was the 25th time
WrestleMania.
It happened,
yeah.
Which is not the 25th anniversary or something.
Because, like, as they said, when you get married, that's not your first anniversary.
Yeah.
But anyway, Shawn Michaels, what an amazing performer. And I think that's what it is. He's just astonishing. I can't take my eyes off him when he's on there. And great. Probably an awful person to be around outside of wrestling, I don't know. Maybe not now, but then, certainly, in his sort of late 90s, before his departure. And then.
Yeah.
But I think when he came back, probably found a lot of peace in that time. And
yeah, it seems like it. People said he was very... I've heard, you know, various accounts, he was extremely difficult to deal with, and that one of the only people that could sort of get through to him was Triple H. There's a story, allegedly before the main event in WrestleMania 14, like, Triple H literally was helping him get dressed, like, before this.
Seriously?
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
I was watching their street fight today from SummerSlam 2003. One of the ones.
One of those, yeah.
I forget, yeah. Oh, it's brilliant and very, very bloody.
It is brilliant. I still hate the ending. I hate anything when Triple H uses his...
I'm really glad he used it for once, because normally he uses just the handle. This time he uses the actual, the head of it.
Yeah.
And twats him twice.
Yeah, it's... Well, because apparently the story leading into that was that they thought it was going to be potentially just a one-off match.
Yeah.
And that they were kind of finding a way to sort of close it. But yeah, no, very, very good. Okay, so who's your number three then?
The thing is, I looked at mine. I mean, there's so many people I wanted to put in there. Sorry, Charlotte. Sorry, Sasha Banks. Sorry, Kevin Owens. Sorry, Sami Zayn. Sorry, loads of people. And sorry, Ultimate Warrior, even though, because he's a childhood favourite.
Mm-hmm.
But now you look back at his matches, he's dreadful. He's a big roidy potato. He's awful. But... Yeah, there's a commonality in all mine, and they're all largely technical. For my third, it's the current, it's AJ Styles.
Really?
Incapable of having a bad match, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, he's had a couple of slightly wonky endings to matches, but apart from that, he drags amazing matches out of whoever he's with. I love the fact he doesn't really have to change much to be a heel or a face, which shows that I think they're doing his character right. He's quite short for a wrestler, but he still carries himself with such authority. He's amazing. His elbow off the top rope, he never misses. Kalisto wouldn't be doing that. Kalisto acts like he's wearing banana skins on his feet.
Yeah.
And he's supposed to be known for doing all that, you know, luchador jumping around. He's so good. He saved
James Ellsworth
from dying.
Yeah.
I mean, what an astonishing
man. Know what he was doing. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I love him. I just he's unable to have a bad match, and that's my reason he's made number three. And yeah, it's more of a match based thing than it is his character. Although I like his character too. I like the fact he looks a bit like Noel Edmonds.
He does, doesn't he?
Yeah. And your number two is...
Oh, you're not going to like this.
Oh, okay, so... No, I am. I'm going to assume it's The Undertaker?
It is The Undertaker.
Okay. I respect him and I don't dislike him.
Okay. My reason being, I can't think of anyone else who is more sort of dedicated to the portrayal of a character, and a very unusual character at that, over such a long period of time. Yeah, sort of 25 years of, as we mentioned earlier, portraying whatever he's supposed to be. He's supposed to be a mortician at first, then with sort of otherworldly powers, whatever sort of thing. But I really like his in-ring work as well. I know some people can accuse him of being a bit sluggish or maybe needing the right opponent, like Shawn Michaels or whoever. Mm. And yeah, I think to a certain extent that is true, but I really, people talk about ring psychology and that, which I don't pretend to be an expert about, but, you can kind of see him building a match up. And I've got a great amount of respect for all the stories that people tell about him, particularly like how he is with other people backstage, helping sort of younger guys and that, and critiquing people's performances and kind of helping them improve. And again, another one who joined the WWF and his loyalty never sort of wavered. I love his entrance, absolutely love his entrance, the music and everything. When I think of what are some of my favourite matches, his name comes up so much, and that is partly to do with it.
I totally respect him, and I think what a legacy, it's incredible. And yeah, you're right, I think he's been brilliant for the business. He's one of the most recognisable names outside of the four of Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan and the other ones that I can't mention right now. But yeah, absolutely, and I agree with that. I kind of wish he'd retired when Brock Lesnar beat him WrestleMania, just a couple of years back now, whatever it was.
30.
Yeah. Just because since then it's been diminishing returns, and now the rumours are he's coming back again for this Mania.
Oh, right. So, well, I don't know whether to pay attention to those rumours or not. I guess the fact that there was no official announcement of a retirement is maybe a clue too. But he did, that was the only time that I've seen him break character, in that he went over and kissed his wife before he walked up there.
Yes.
I've never seen him do that before. Only when he was doing the whole biker gimmick for like 3 years.
Oh,
yeah.
When he was on fire, he didn't break character. Yeah. That was pretty astonishing.
Yeah, just keeps walking. Yeah.
Didn't he suffer like third-degree burns or something? They had to keep dousing him in water.
They kept spraying like fire extinguishers towards him and that, like,
it was an elimination chamber, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah. I've seen the footage of that, but I haven't actually watched the match. But yeah, okay. It's time for your number one.
Are we all number ones already? Okay.
Well, because you talked about,
I did, Shawn Michaels already done my number two. Yeah. Okay. Very, very strongly linked to my number two. Number two. And well, look, okay, I'm going to say, look, I like the monsters and the sort of the carnivals and the cartoonish, overbearing giants of wrestling. I really do. However, that said, whilst I admire the ridiculousness of that, I do need a grain of plausibility, just a tiny little bit of authenticity. So my favourite has been and probably will always be Bret Hart.
Really?
Bret the Hitman Hart.
Oh,
yay.
Awesome.
I think he's fantastic. I don't know about the real guy in real life. Lord knows what he's like. He seems a bit of a mood, in all honesty. But I just think he's so technically proficient. Crisp in the ring. Years ahead of his time. The stuff he was doing back in the early 90s, before he was in, the champion, was just brilliant. His running bulldog is astonishing.
Yeah.
I love it. He looks like he genuinely believes everything that's going on around him. I think it's safe to say Bret Hart is his own biggest mark. He looks like a man who genuinely believes that wrestling is real, and his pissed off face, because he looks quite surly most of the time, makes me believe that what's happening is real. I can genuinely believe in that character. And whether he's having matches with Austin, or his brother-in-law Bulldog, or his real brother Owen Hart, or Shawn Michaels, who he legitimately hated.
Yeah.
He makes me believe in that character. So amidst all the chaos and the lunacy of wrestling, it's always Bret Hart. It probably always will be. He's the Dark Knight trilogy of wrestling, in that he's that slightly plausible version of what wrestling could be.
Yeah.
And I think he's great for that. and it, most of my favourite matches are him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, most of them.
That's awesome.
Yay, Braun.
Have you seen, it was on a Raw, I think it was like 1993 or something, Bret Hart versus, as he was at the time, the 1-2-3
Kid. Pretty Kid. No, yeah. It's in that book, and I've not seen it. It's one of the, I was looking through it, I didn't know this was a thing.
It's so good, and it's undoubtedly, you know, Sean Waltman's best match, sort of thing. Yeah, it's really, really good. Yeah, yeah. That's the thing that people say about Bret, is that he could get a good match out of anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's true.
Yeah,
it's,
and that's the thing. I think I've gone pretty much technical all the way there.
Yeah.
There are people who I really like who aren't part of that set, but I think that's just what I'm geared towards.
Okay.
Okay, who's your number? I'm fascinated this because I genuinely thought it would be Undertaker for your number one.
Oh, did you? Okay.
I know exactly who it is.
Yeah, tell me.
Breaking Glass, go.
It's not.
It's not Stone Cold.
It's not, no.
Oh, who is it then? This is interesting. Oh, this is... Kurt Angle?
No.
I don't know. Go on.
My favourite wrestler, and this is the person I had to think, there was no choice in it whatsoever, is Mick Foley.
Oh, well, of course it is Mick Foley.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. Yeah. It's so weird when people say Mick Foley because... he's not your typical wrestler.
Yeah.
I mean, as in looks, you know, aesthetically.
Well, yeah, he's he looks out of shape most of his career. Like, he's got this huge fat ass, like which he used to sort of great effect as a landing pad. And he's quite, I suppose he's not short for an average human, but he's on the shorter side of a wrestler.
Yeah,
he's got this weird way of walking around, but I just the humanity that he brings. Wrestling, I think that's probably what's won me over. Obviously, you know, his sort of daredevil stuff. So, but sometimes I find some of that sort of sickening to watch, the stuff that he put himself through. But yeah, again, someone who just would always put what he was doing first, you know, regardless of where he was on the card or you know what was going to happen next. And I like the whole this sort of character things that he does because. Of which Cactus Jack is probably my favourite. Like, whenever he was Cactus Jack, loved it. And I've watched a lot of his non-WWE stuff as well. And again, all very good. Some of it quite difficult to watch, like some of the stuff in Japan and that. But really good on the mic, great character. Just always a joy to watch.
Yeah, he does seem like a legitimately lovely guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's always come across really warm and funny and humorous about what he does. And yeah, I love the fact that he had the three different characters. I was attracted first to Mankind because it's like a horror character, isn't it? Being in the basement with a mask on and stuff like that. And I love the fact that he incorporated that into his story of being Mick Foley. And that's who he turned into. That's so weird and cool and good. Wasn't so keen on Dude Love, but hey.
Yeah, I don't think anyone is really. But
no.
I can't think of any other wrestler who's it's just become more and more themselves, you know, out of their characters rather than developing a character. Yeah, it's odd to see it that way. But yeah, and again, lots of my favourite matches feature him. So there we go.
Cool. Yeah, Chris Jericho is someone who goes through different characters, stages and stuff. He just did the sort of the stupid idiot, the sort of essentially a sitcom character recently with his Kevin Owens sort of team up. And now, of course, he's doing have you seen the New Japan one with Kenny Omega?
I've just written a bit about that down. Watched it the other day.
Yeah, same.
What did you think of it?
I really liked it. It's different Jericho. He's very aggressive.
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was so good. Yeah, Chris Jericho recently fought Kenny Omega at New Japan Pro Wrestling, Wrestle Kingdom 12, which is their equivalent of WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought it was a different Jericho. It's like his hair was slightly longer.
Yeah.
He came out to cheers, but then he was essentially playing the heel.
Yeah.
And it's just the fact that without those constraints of WWE, he was able to do some different things. Like, they were doing pile drivers. He did the Walls of Jericho the way he used to do it. Like, it had a bit of a twist in it, which again, it looks so much more...
Yeah,
painful.
Less
like,
than just a Boston Crab.
It's sort of his own thing, and it just seemed like a very intense, you know, pacey match that was, a different slice of Jericho. Yeah.
And he's someone who's just been able to reinvent himself and reinvent himself, and as far as I can see, get better. Because I watch his old stuff, which is still great, but every new incarnation of Jericho I've really, really liked. Mm. So now we're talking about Jericho. Not on the list, but he nearly made the list. Oh, that was, I didn't mean to say that. Yeah, he's so good. I mean, and the guy's fighting Kenny Omega. I mean, I've only seen him, again, I thought I should watch, because every wrestling fan apparently has to watch him versus Okada, which I watched only for the first time very recently. That's astonishing. That's the one that infamously got 6 stars from Dave Meltzer.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Well, they had a series of matches, but I just watched the one that got 6, because I'm not going to watch all of them.
Okay. I must check that out. That's the only one of his matches I've seen.
Yeah. He's really good, as you'd suspect. But yeah, the Okada-Omega match, he's great too. I was really, really into the match, which is astonishing, given that I didn't really know either of them at the start of it.
Yeah. Okay.
So who else nearly made your list?
Well,
it was exciting.
Actually, the next name after it that I wrote down was Bret Hart.
Yay!
I didn't feel like I'd watched enough of his stuff to sort of... he's someone that I've kind of discovered in retrospect. Like, obviously, he wasn't on TV when I started watching it. But yeah, again, just consistency of matches. And
his stuff with the Hart Foundation with Jim Anvil, Neidhart, was amazing.
Yeah.
It's a shame that I can't remember. They probably did, but I don't remember seeing them versus the Rockers, and that would have been amazing, because it's, you know, Hart and versus Shawn Michaels and, you know, Marty Jannetty. There was a match where I'm sure the Rockers got the titles from them, but the top turnbuckle broke or something, the ropes collapsed, and then was it a house match or something? They didn't officially order give it to them, something like that.
Know about that.
So I don't remember seeing those two go at it, but they would have been amazing, because again, like the Hart Foundation, the Rockers, shit name, terrible music, awful look, obviously, but they were terrific. And again, a bit ahead of their time, that more fast-paced, sort of very quick. They're not quite Matt style, but lots of transitions, lots of counters. I love all that. If it looks too choreographed, I lose, you know, my belief, but if it's just crisply done. Sorry, who else?
The other people on the list is, I put Kurt Angle down, so you weren't a million miles away.
No.
Again, I just loved him when I first started watching it, and I was, you know, very much, as you would say, a mark. you know, I hated him because of his promos and his arrogance and that, just because of the character he's portraying, and he just sold that so brilliantly.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not really his sort of speciality area, but I can't think of one person who does a more beautiful looking moonsault. I don't know how he makes it last like a few seconds. It sort of arcs around, but yeah, brilliant. It's a rather controversial one, but well, incredibly. But Chris Benoit's on my list.
But that's the thing.
Yeah. He's,
as a mat wrestler and as a character too, not controversial, because he was great.
Yeah.
It's a terrible pity, you know, how he ended up. Obviously, if you don't know, Google him. But wonderful, and he comes from that great tradition of fantastic Canadian wrestlers, you know, like, as I said, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Chris Jericho, Bret Hart.
There's a match from 2000. Well, he had a series of matches with Chris Jericho, and one of them is, you know, it came very close to being in my list of favourite matches.
Yeah,
it's that perfect mixture of technicality and, you know, more sort of staged wrestling. Yeah.
The one where he got the title from, where he won the title again, it was against Triple H and Shawn Michaels. Was it Triple H, Shawn Michaels?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was,
yeah.
That nearly made my list. It was amazing.
Yeah.
But just didn't for, you know, space reasons. But that's brilliant stuff. And again, I barely knew him. In fact, all I really knew about him was the terrible way in which his life ended.
Yeah.
But still, that match got me by the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's brilliant. And also, very rarely, when they do, because they don't tend to do it so much these days, but they'll quite often, the next pay-per-view, they'll have essentially the same match again at Backlash or whatever it is. And they did that time, and it was in Canada, and he retained. You'd have thought they'd maybe run out of ideas, but no, equally good. Yeah. I guess that's what happens if you have those three people in the ring at the same time, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The other these aren't really in the same sort of league, but I had to put The Rock down because, again, at the time he was like, when I first started watching it, he was like the face of faces.
Yeah.
And, you know, I loved that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, slightly, I feel, again, because it's his sort of lack of maybe dedication to wrestling, you feel like you shouldn't choose him, but I did write down Brock Lesnar because
right.
I just find Anytime he's a match, I do get genuinely excited if he's going to be in a match, because I think what he's so unpredictable, and I wonder how his opponents are going to handle him, because you know he's sort of so strong and so sort of overbearing. I always find a Lesnar match interesting.
He feels like a big time, and it's always, to my mind, inconceivable that anyone could beat him. I suppose that does make it interesting. I only like him when he clearly is interested. He's like Randy Orton to me. When he's interested, brilliant, but I can tell when he doesn't care.
Yeah.
He just shows it on his face and shows it in his performance. Like, Randy Orton will be slick and smooth like he is because he's so crisp in the ring and he'll go through the motions, but I can see it in his dead eyes, he doesn't care. Brock Lesnar will take a step back and he just won't do anything.
Mm.
Like that WrestleMania match with Ambrose, which was just abysmal.
Oh, yeah. And,
but Dean was really trying to get something out of him for like 20 minutes until the inevitable suplex, orgy at the end.
Yeah.
But yeah, Lesnar, it's weird. I like him more now than I think I did, 2 years ago, where I was just a bit bored of him. But now he's done a few different things. He did that run with Goldberg, I think, was great. That did him excellent favours.
The more I watch that match, the Survivor Series one that lasted like a minute and a half, the more I like it.
Mm.
The more I think, at the time, because we sat down, we watched it.
Yeah. We were on our feet.
Yeah. And it was, I thought, there's only 20 minutes left. There's only 10 minutes left of this show. Like, what are they going to do? And at first I think I just couldn't believe it, because they'd sold the whole pay-per-view.
Yeah.
On this match, and then it only lasts like less than 2 minutes. But it did exactly what it should have done. It got people talking and it set up another couple of things. Yeah. And just brilliant. Joyful to watch.
Yeah. And I have more respect for him now for letting that happen, let him be booked in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think someone of his caliber, someone of his star stature, could turn around and say, no, fuck off.
Yeah.
I'm winning this. And he probably, within his contract, he has every right to do so. He's probably got final position rights, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Mind you, that was his... I mean, apart from, if you don't count elimination from the Royal Rumble, that was his last loss.
Yeah. Yeah, he's sticking around now until Mania, when clearly Reigns is going to beat him.
Well, yeah. We can talk about that later.
Okay. Well, that's a lot of good wrestlers.
Yes, it is. Do you have a favourite non-WWE thing?
Oh, great question. No. Okay. I might.
Okay.
Yeah. Hang on. I'm going to have to think about that. Not right now. Do you?
Yeah, I'd say that mine was probably the first ECW pay-per-view, which was Barely Legal, 1997.
It's the official videotape release of ECW's very first pay-per-view, Barely Legal, as the Eliminators regain the World Tag Team titles. Rob Van Dam takes on Lance Storm. The Michinoku Pro six-man tag team high-flying extravaganza.
Shane Douglas and Francine are in for a rude awakening as ravishing Rick Rude takes the franchise to the extreme. The most highly anticipated match in ECW history. Taz, Sabu, one-on-one. Bill Alfonso leaves the building with Mr. Monday Night. Terry Funk, Stevie Richards, and the Sandman fight for the right to take on Raven as the Funker becomes the world's heavyweight champion. It's a videotape so extreme, it's barely legal.
It's about 2.5 hours long. And again, it's just, everyone on it seems, it's introduced by Joey Styles. He comes out and does a sort of introduction to it. And it's like, like the realization of an indie dream sort of thing. They finally made it to the stage where they can sell something to direct to people and sort of make money of it. It's like a validation of what they've been doing, and everyone looks just so happy to be involved with it. And the quality of some of the matches is very good, so I'd say it's probably that.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, I mean, I can't bear Sandman, but still, have you seen on the there's this big concussions lawsuit hanging over the WWE at the moment by lots of ex-wrestlers. But there it is anyway.
Okay.
It's often rumoured the reason that they gave New Day the longest tag champs ever is to take that accolade away from Demolition. Because Demolition, the like Axe and Smash, or whoever is left in it, are two of the plaintiffs trying to sue the WWE for this concussions lawsuit. The idea behind the whole lawsuit is that they've suffered concussions now for all the times they got smashed around in the ring. They weren't responsible. They hold their former employer. One of the people on that list of plaintiffs is Sabu, who spent only 12 months with the WWE after years of being with ECW, doing the most dangerous, insane stuff.
Sabu, I mean, yeah, maybe your employer would ask you to do certain things, but Sabu does seem very much responsible for his own actions. Like, because I don't know him in terms of like contractual obligations, but certainly it seems like he's doing his own thing.
Terrifying most of it was. Do you have a favourite promo?
Well, I mean, the obvious answer is going to be the pipe bomb by CM Punk.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to say that.
That would have been a great answer.
I'm going to say, is it just because it's the first thing I thought of? Sensational Sherry asking Ultimate Warrior if he would grant Macho Man Randy Savage a match. And she's trying to appeal to his sort of sexual side, which is never going to happen because he's a lunatic. Roided up to the max. And all he has to do at the end is shake his head, get angry and say, no!
Come on. Aren't you going to give the Macho King his title match? Just say yes to me. That's all I want from you. That is all I want from you, Warrior.
Am I going to say that? Right now, because I've got nothing else to say, it might be that. Or it'll be anything Jake Roberts said between 1989 and 1991.
Okay.
Because he was great, and he was the first person to play down the histrionics and the shouting stuff and do whispering and do sort of... Yeah. I mean, they said, oh, he's a great psychologist. He's not. He just doesn't shout.
Yeah.
But it was a refreshing change. But apart from that, I don't have a specific example.
Okay.
What's yours?
Well, it's interesting that yours is from that era as well, because despite the fact that most of what I've watched is sort of post-1996, mine's actually from that era too. And it's a post-match promo, and it's pretty much the opposite of yours. Ric Flair, after he won the 1992
Royal Rumble.
I'm going to tell you all, with a tear in my eye, this is the greatest moment in my life.
Yeah, and
I love that.
Yeah, it's just, Ric Flair's style of doing a promo is to look directly into the camera and start shouting at it. And you can see the people around him, like, literally laughing. Like, Gene Okerlund's laughing. Kurt Hennig is laughing, right? But he just sells it so much. And the stuff he's saying is hilarious and joyous. And you can see what... Again, you said earlier about charisma. Like, he oozes charisma.
Yeah, he's talking about Hulkamaniacs are crying and stuff.
Yeah.
I love that. It's insane.
Yeah, it is insane. particularly that... And halfway through that promo, like, someone says something off camera and me and Gene Okerlund sort of just says, like, what's going on? Or something. Oh, it's just brilliant. Do you have a moment that you thought might have been real?
Oh, yes. Okay, I'm going to say a recent one, just because that's the most recently I've been got.
Okay.
And it was when I showed you this. It was on Talking Smack, the since cancelled post-Smackdown discussion show, which lasts about 20 minutes. Yeah. Daniel Bryan used to sort of just give out and say whatever the hell he likes with his "you'll never find me, I'm too popular" kind of shtick, which is great. But it was at the end of it, and obviously this was supposed to happen where... What's his name? The lone wolf. Baron Corbin. And was it a referee?
It was a referee.
And he hit, but he looked like he hit him actually far too hard.
Yeah.
And the guy really went back, and he stops for a second.
Yeah.
And it does look like he didn't mean to hit him that hard. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that was all planned, but I was taken for a second and think, fuck. And actually, on the same show where The Miz gave out to Daniel Bryan about his injuries, why didn't he fuck off to the Indies and just start wrestling? If he loves wrestling so much, you can do that. You know, they aren't going to stop you.
Mm.
And Daniel Bryan walked off. And whilst I'm sure the walking off was probably planned, I think Daniel Bryan took great offence at that. Yeah. I think there was a... Again, like we were saying earlier, with the grain of truth within it, that's when I think wrestling works so well.
You had your chance to talk. You're the one that called me a coward in the wrestling ring. I'm the coward in the wrestling ring.
Yeah.
But let's talk about cowards for 1 second. Okay. The reason I wrestle the way I wrestle is because I can do it day in and day out all the time for 10 plus years. I have never, never in my career ever have been injured. I don't get injured for 6 months to a year. I am here each and every week. But you sit there and call me a coward?
Yeah.
I'm the coward. Wait, let me tell you about a coward. Let me tell you about a guy who tells his WWE fans, the people that he loves, that he will be back. He promises them. I promise you, I will be back in 1 year's time to claim this title. But you didn't, Daniel, did you? But I'm the coward.
Okay,
I'm the one that doesn't love the fans.
If they would let me come back, I would come back.
Oh, if you would?
Yeah.
You would. You love that WWE ring. You love being wrestling. You love being right in that wrestling ring. And you love wrestling, right? Well, why don't you quit? Why don't you quit and go to the bingo halls with your indie friends?
Okay, I think you
need
to calm. That's not what this show's about.
So that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Most of Talking Smack seemed off the cuff. And even if it had planned moments at the end, a lot of that stuff, I think, was shoot, as they say. Yes. Go on then, what's yours?
Well, mine is an in-ring moment. No Way Out 2001. It's the pay-per-view in between the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
And what had happened was Steve Austin won the Royal Rumble.
Mm. Spoilers.
But Kurt Angle still held the title.
Right.
Pretty much everyone knew that the main event of WrestleMania was going to be Rock Austin. Mm. So Angle had to drop the title to The Rock.
Yeah.
And it's probably just Angle just being brilliant at selling a concept.
Yeah.
But it was one of those moments that seemed like it seemed like sort of post that. It seemed at one step beyond the usual storyline. There's a bit, Angle seemed so annoyed throughout the whole match at the prospect of having to drop the title.
Really?
And there's one moment where he's got Rock in an ankle lock and he shouts, you know, like, you can hear, I mean, it was Attitude Era and that, and they can kind of get away with it, but still, their whole attitude to swearing was usually to keep it under wraps. He shouts, and you can hear him audibly say, "Tap out or I'm going to break your fucking ankle." Like, and he looks the bile on his face. Like, as I was watching, I thought, oh my goodness, like, this is, what's he doing? Like, yeah.
An angle! Oh!
And it's Kurt, and he's brilliant at that sort of thing. But yeah, because it had, again, a grain of truth, like, obviously he would have wanted to be in the main event of the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, totally.
But everyone knew, like, it was one of those things.
That's good, it's live theatre. I love that, because they put it back in the hands of the performers.
Yeah.
There's nothing they can do once they're out there. And that's what's wrestling listening is so great. And again, going back to the fake thing, I'm always amazed when they have a live episode of EastEnders and everyone congratulates them and say that was astonishing and all of that. And I'm sure it's a very difficult thing to put together. But then part of me does think, hang on a fucking minute. 5 hours of Raw and SmackDown a week. It's completely live. It's all scripted. And it's got stunts in it throughout.
Yeah.
And I know it's stupid and they cut to cameras which shouldn't be in places where they are filming stuff. And you have to sort of give that up. But I always think, well, they do this all the time. And yeah, good on them. Oh, why did I bring that up? I'm not sure. But it's great.
Well, why not compare one of the longest shows on telly to another one of the longest shows on television?
Very true, yeah. 25 years for Raw. Yeah. How many EastEnders? Actually, it's probably 30 plus, isn't it now?
Yeah.
Yeah, about 1985, was it? 1984? Whatever.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Go on then. Another question.
You might have to think about this one, but the next thing I've put down is, do you have a favourite show of technicality?
Oh.
As in, like, you know, a well-played technical wrestling match, or... It's probably going to be a Brett match for you.
Yeah, totally. I don't know.
Okay.
Do you? Who's the one?
Well, there's two which I wanted to mention. Again, two of the best technicians. There's, at WrestleMania 17, there was a match between Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit. And with virtually no storyline to back it up, because they seemed like they possibly threw it together at the last minute.
Yeah.
They just, apparently what they said to each other beforehand was, let's, first half of this match, let's have a genuine mat wrestling match.
Yeah.
And that's what they do, you know, and it's, yeah, it's very, very good. And there's another one from ECW, which Dean Malenko and Eddie Guerrero had a series of matches culminating in a 2 out of 3 falls.
Yeah, that's astonishing.
Yeah, it's just so fast paced, and it's move after move after move after move. It's brilliant.
Guerrero trying to snap the spine of the Iceman. Shoulders are down. 1, 2, no. Malenko flips him over. 1, 2, no. Guerrero turns him over. 1, 2, Malenko reverses it. 1, 2, no.
Actually, I'm going to say then Shinsuke Nakamura, Sami Zayn.
Ah, okay, yeah.
That was amazing. That was really, really good. Yeah, there we are.
Okay, brilliant. Do you have a favourite feud? As in, you know, long-running...
Yeah, there's so many. How can I boil it down to one?
Yeah, yeah.
That's not fair.
No, you can't.
But I'm going to have to, because you're asking me to. Actually, I'm going to go for the women here. Charlotte, Sasha Banks.
Okay.
Yeah, I could say Charlotte... Sorry, Sasha Banks, Bailey, but I'm not going to. Yeah, Charlotte, Sasha Banks, they just... It was clear that those two were a huge tier above the rest of the women's division. And that's not to discredit any of the remaining women. They're all, these days, women's wrestling is so much better than it used to be. I mean, maybe not even on a technical level. It's always been very good on a technical level. But the way they present it now is so much more respectful. And I'm very grateful for that. But... That said, so I think it's 2 years ago, was it? When they just had this series of matches, and like every pay-per-view was Charlotte versus Sasha Banks, and every single match was astonishing. That it always seemed to be that Sasha would win on Raw and then Charlotte would win on pay-per-view. And just, it was what they referred to as a clinic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every time they just poured their bodies into these matches, and incredible they were too. So yeah, I'm going to go for that, because... There was no clear winner, because they were as good as each other, and they literally hated each other because both wanted to be the champion, and that's what it should be. So I'm going to go for that, even though it's there's not much story or drama to it. It's the fact that each wanted to be the champion.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah, I'm going for that. Why not? Yeah, I'm doing it.
Nice.
Done. What's yours?
I thought pretty hard about this, actually. It is a difficult question, but I'd say it is probably Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker.
Oh, okay.
Because it's something which I think quite uniquely spans those two eras. Like, it started in... Their first match is in 1997.
Oh, my life.
Culminating in the first Hell in a Cell match.
Yeah, yeah.
Then there was the Royal Rumble match 1998, which was the match that Shawn injured his back on. And then, again, you'd like... 12 years later, they have those two WrestleMania matches at 25 and 26. And there's the whole story about, you know, Undertaker being the one who had to sort of enforce certain things on Shawn Michaels when he was, like, misbehaving back before his sort of first run ended. Yeah, so that's for that reason.
Even went on beyond that, really, didn't it? Where Shawn Michaels was a referee, and that was it, a cage match, wasn't it? With, was it Triple H? Triple H on the
Undertaker. At 28, yeah.
So they even took it beyond that, and that was amazing. That was a great part of it too. So, okay, no, fair shout. I like that.
Okay.
Also, quick one to Owen Hart and Bret Hart, because that's great too.
Yes, yeah. Right. That match at WrestleMania 10 and the SummerSlam that followed it.
Which one's the cage match?
The cage match is the SummerSlam.
Bret just wins, then he gets beaten up, I think, where everyone piles in on him.
Good.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Okay, it's a quiz.
Quiz.
Let's get ready to rumble.
Ah.
Okay, right. I've written easy round here with the anticipation that I'd do more than one round, but I've only got two rounds.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, that's all right.
Okay, right. Question number one.
Okay.
What does Triple H stand for?
Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
Oh, sorry, you're wrong. It's Harold the Horny Hunter.
Oh.
An enormous horn.
Oh, okay.
All right, you are right. It's what you said. Yeah. Okay, right. Now, question number two.
Jake the Snake Robert loves snakes. At the height of his fame, he was on over 200 a day. Pythons, cobras, vipers, anacondas, mambas. As long as they were as legless as him, he was on them. Jake's finisher was famously the DDT. But what does DDT stand for?
Ah, do you know what? I don't know that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's Dirty Den's Terrific. Jake was a big EastEnders fan. It's actually dichloropidiv... I can't read that.
Is it, named after the gas? The chemical.
Yeah,
okay.
Question number three. Finish the famous phrase by a well-known stable. Sierra, Hotel, India, Echo...
Delta. Oh, wait, L. Yeah, Lima, Delta.
No, it's not. It's Love, Den. Seth Rollins is also a massive EastEnders and Dirty Den fan.
Yeah, I had heard that, yeah.
Okay. The Big Show really is a massive show. You know, like Don't Forget Your Toothbrush or Pets Win Prizes. But what Big Show did Mick Fleetwood present terribly with Samantha Fox in 1989? Was it A, the Brits, B, the shits, or C, all-star celebrity arseholes?
I'd love it to be C, but it is the Brits.
It is the Brits, otherwise known as all-star celebrity arseholes. Okay, we're at question number five now. Which traditionally is, if this were a wrestling match, like a traditional wrestling match, back in the day.
Go on, yeah. What would it be like?
It would be like where the face makes his triumphant comeback. Because face wins for a bit, this is how it goes, okay. Back old traditional wrestling matches. Face wins for a bit, gets knocked down by the heel. Oh no, dastardly shit's happening. And then out of nowhere, the face gets his like heat back and starts.
Yeah. That's every Hulk Hogan match.
Basically, is what I'm describing. Yeah.
Okay.
I fucking hate Hogan. Let's talk about him in a bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Number five. How many Royal Rumbles has the Queen done?
Oh, the Queen. Well, I've got no idea.
She hasn't done any. She's not a wrestler.
Oh.
No, but she did WrestleMania 7. Make comment on British Bulldog versus the Warlord. She favoured Bobby Heenan's heel wrestler in lieu of her subject, David Boy Smith.
Oh, no.
It was a lookalike, it wasn't really.
Oh, okay.
There we are. Right. It's the names round. Okay, names round, which is only three questions wrong.
Okay, that's cool.
Okay, one. Mike Mizanin is the real name of which wrestler?
That's The Miz.
No, it's Brie Bella. Yeah, it's The Miz, well done. Okay. Question number two. China's real name is...
Joni Laura.
No, it's Ethel Clitflick. Sorry, no. It is Joni Laura. Whatever you said, yeah. Well done. And for a bonus point, can you tell me the belt for which she is the only female winner?
It's Intercontinental.
Intercontinental, yes. For a double bonus point, can you tell me who she beat to get it?
Was it Chris Jericho?
I think it was Jericho. I don't know. I'm pretty sure it was Jericho. I was even going to say that or Eddie Guerrero, but I don't know if that's true.
No, it was... I'm pretty fairly sure it was Jericho, yeah.
Okay. Three, John Tenta was originally known as Canadian what?
I don't know this.
Earthquake!
Oh, really?
Yay, a big fat man in a woman's blue swimming costume.
Yeah, I remember that.
Special move was squatting on people.
Yeah.
There we are.
Dreadful.
Yeah.
You know, he was supposed to be the original, you know, when they did Sergeant Slaughter has defected to the Iraqis, he's an Iraqi sympathiser. Yeah. It was supposed to be Earthquake.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he refused to do it.
Oh, good for him. It was a shit story.
Yeah.
And quite offensive at the time.
Yeah.
And drew so little, they had to change stadium for WrestleMania 7.
It was one of those things, it just seemed like a dreadful appropriating a horrible political event and humanitarian
real
event
life conflict
to do it, you know, to sort of jump on the back of that, and it backfired horribly, and like they had to, you know, Sergeant Slaughter had to like legitimately have bodyguard escort everywhere for ages because the people that were into it
and take that sort of shit seriously
thought it was, you know.
And that's the time when kayfabe was pretty much still, you know, supported and believed in. It's the cheapest of cheap heat, really, isn't it? Yeah. Boo on you, WWE, all those years ago. Well, it's WWF then. Well, that was a quiz. I'm sorry I didn't actually get to finish it. Hooray, we're all winners. It's a DQ. Brought to the back.
A run in. How many people do you think are still listening?
Very few. Yeah. Us.
If you're still
at least
there,
two.
Yeah, two. If you're still there, thank you very much. We promise to do a real one next time.
Yeah.
Okay. Favourite matches. What are our favourite matches?
I've tried to think of matches that mean something to me rather than just... because anyone can go on the internet and look up, what are the greatest matches of all time?
Yeah.
I feel that the matches that I've chosen probably are on those lists because they've got to be a mixture of a good wrestling match and a good story and also something that either like, I feel sort of attached a sentimental value to or whatever sort of thing. My third favourite match of all time, and it even surprises me the amount, but I've picked ones that I've probably watched the most because I think that's a good indicator.
Yeah.
But it is it's The Rock versus Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 18.
Right, okay.
Body and The Rock, and The Rock now turning the table on Hogan. And another hard shot by The Rock, and you know, you can't clap. But this crowd right now is suddenly in Hollywood Hogan's favour.
Which, again, surprises me that is that, because like you, I really don't like Hogan.
Mm.
But this match, I love the fact that Hogan comes out, I love the story behind it, Hogan comes out as a heel, or what they want
to be
a
heel,
but he's not, people are cheering for him.
Yeah.
He comes out to the NWO music, which I love. And they've got all that sort of, you know, the black and white screen image and that. And then the crowd is just, it's the hottest crowd I've ever heard from start to finish.
Yeah.
And the fact that they allegedly had to change elements of the match on the fly because of the crowd. I actually think it is a reasonably well-worked match.
Considering the sort of dearth of technicality of both.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, neither of them are the... you know,
no,
they're definitely all characters rather than I mean, The Rock does have a certain amount of technical skill.
Yeah. I just say the people's elbow is the worst finisher.
Yeah. Well, it's
doesn't make any fucking sense.
No.
He runs from under, then he stops, and then does a little dance, and then drops. Where he's lost all the momentum.
I was looking at a list of.
It's like you can't see me. Go on, sorry.
I was looking at a list of like wrestling moves or something, and finishes, and what they're, if people were to attribute a technical name for these things, like the Stone Cold Stunner, like the technical name for that is like reverse three-quarter headlock or something like that.
Yeah.
The technical name for a people's elbow is something like delayed running elbow drop with theatrical moment or something like that. It's something utterly ridiculous, but yeah. Yeah.
Even Hogan's leg drop,
seems,
which again is shit, it seems...
seems sensible by comparison, doesn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
Atomic leg drop. What's atomic about it? Yeah. I'm sorry, I don't want to shit over it. You're right. I think crowd reaction is so important for the enjoyment of the match. And yeah, they are. They're going to burst any minute, the crowd, on that.
So yeah, that would be my third favourite. And
okay.
Yeah, for someone who claims to, you know, like technical wrestling the best, it seems an odd choice, but yeah, it's just it's hypnotic to watch, really. Number three,
I've gone a bit conceptual with this. I wanted to pass out my choices, so I've chosen a spectacle, a crowd, just a pure crowd emotion one, and then a personal favourite.
Yeah,
so they are all favourites, but I've just tried to be a bit wanky about why I chose
it. That's fine.
So for number three, I'm going to go for Hardy Boys versus Edge and Christian versus Dudley Boys.
Yeah.
WrestleMania X7.
Jeff moving the ladder underneath him. For Bubba Ray Dudley. And look at Edge. Oh, my God! Edge for the 20-foot ladder with a spear on Jeff Hardy. For the love of God, Jeff Hardy may be broken. Smack dab in half.
Yeah.
Because it's a pure, utter, jaw-dropping spectacle. And in a way, it's ruined all wrestling ever since, especially TLC matches, because it's just so amazing what they get up to and the danger they put themselves into. And I'm not someone who has to thrive on the fact that people are, you know, putting their bodies at serious risk, but it helps. But it is brilliant. And it's just the theatrics and the athleticism that they go to at this is just draw. It's amazing. And the right people win, and
God, what a match. So yeah, that's there. I didn't really know a great deal about it before I watched it. It's one of those, I'm a Johnny Come Lately to, you know, WrestleMania X7, a brilliant show that it is. And this just blew me away. And I haven't seen a TLC match. They've come very, very close, and they've done some astonishing things since, but this is still the standard bearer for that type of match.
Yeah, it is. Wow. It is outstanding, isn't it? That spear at the end.
Yeah. just fucking wow.
Yeah.
It's so dangerous.
Yeah.
And I love it for that. And I feel bad. I feel like a spectator at a Roman fucking lion. I don't know, what do you call it? The things? Gladiator things?
The Colosseum.
Colosseum, yeah. Like goading them on. But fuck it, it's so good.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is amazing.
That's my number three.
My second favourite match, and I've gone for, this is my sentimental match, because it was the first pay-per-view I ever watched, Royal Rumble 2000, is Cactus Jack versus Triple H in a street fight.
The McMahon Helmsley era is running the show. I'm here tonight to tell you flat out that I think the McMahon Helmsley era kind of sucks.
In some ways, I can't believe it was the first sort of show I watched, because this match is so violent, and it's sort of, you know, as a sort of introduction to what wrestling was, it's not really actually a fair yardstick to measure it by. Mm-hmm. What it was part of Mick Foley was planning on retiring, and he wanted to revisit some of his sort of most famous spots and put on some brilliant matches. Right. And the person that he chose to do that with was Triple H, because he can bring a sort of hated heel. Yeah. Perfect foil for that sort of thing, and he could back it up technically as well. And yeah, they just take it to the extremes. Lots of callbacks to his ECW days. You know, speaking of extreme,
yeah,
they do the certain, but like, you know, he's got the 2x4 wrapped in barbed wire. They use the thumbtacks. Yeah. Go through tables. It's a long match, which I like. It's a solid 30 minutes. Right. The promo building up to it was brilliant, because it shows that it's one of those ones where he transforms from Mankind into Cactus Jack.
Yeah.
And then kind of unleashes hell. And it's got a very definite beginning, middle and end. It's a constant build up to a sort of climax. And again, as you know, I love Mick Foley. It does remind me of when I first started watching it. So there's that as well. Yeah, I think it's brilliant. Very, very well paced. Just particularly for a hardcore match, which can sometimes lose that sense of rhythm, because they get carried away in what they can do. This one kept it, and was excellent.
Oh, fantastic. I still haven't seen it, so I'd quite like to watch that at some point. I do like it when they know when to finish a match, when the crowd are hot enough to end it, and not just so much as you feel that this should have ended then, and they go on a bit like, just missed out. Okay, my number two then is, it's a crowd thing, and it's CM Punk versus John Cena.
Oh, okay. Is it the Money in the Bank 2000?
It's the Chicago one, yeah.
The referee never rang the bell. Del Rio never cashed in the briefcase. CM Punk is leaving through this hometown crowd with a WWE Championship.
I think he just kissed the WWE goodbye.
It's just, the crowd make that. Now, I wasn't around. Well, I wasn't around. I was watching wrestling when CM Punk, you know, ascended to the level of, you know, cult figure, essentially, hence, you know, cult personality. So it's not something with which, you know, I lived at the time, but I've since gone back and watched it, and I watched the promos beforehand, I watched the match. It made me so into the match, and the crowd were just explosive for this. I watched the Raw afterwards to see what had happened, because he went off and, spoilers, he got the title and then fucked off and left the company. So I wanted to watch and see what the upshot of that was, and they had like a tournament thing and whatever, and he did come back eventually anyway. But God, that match, the near falls in it are astonishing, and clearly seen as the big, because he's the big poster boy face of the company, and people rebel against that, and it's just great. It's really great storytelling and technical wrestling, and they're so kind. I nearly put in though CM Punk versus Brock Lesnar.
Oh really?
That was great. Yeah, with Heyman getting involved in the middle of it and stuff like that. CM Punk's someone that, unfortunately, you know, I just wasn't watching wrestling at the time, but he does seem to have had some fantastic work in the WWE. But
That match is astounding, isn't it? Yeah. And the loudness of the boos for Cena when he comes out. And even, I can't remember who the commentator is, but they say like Cena just walked straight to the ring. He didn't do the salute. He didn't throw his hat and clothes into the crowd. Like, he just was like, no, they're obviously not going to want it. Like, yeah. Oh, it was perfect. Yeah, it's really good.
Who's your number one then? This is... Oh, can I guess again?
Yeah, go on.
Austin Rock? I don't know.
No.
Okay, go on then.
You're halfway there.
Austin McMahon?
No. No, no, no.
Go on then.
It's, and again, I almost didn't want to choose this because it's at the top of so many people's lists, but it is Bret Hart versus Stone Cold Steve Austin at WrestleMania 13. Yeah.
Now the finger is pointed at you. You're the one who's changed.
He snapped McMahon!
They say your ego is your enemy. There is only one solution. You must make Austin beg for mercy. But what if Stone Cold Steve Austin wins? What becomes of Bret Hitman Hart then?
Yeah, that is great.
It's
isn't
so
it?
Good.
The double turn.
Double turn. Yeah, I mean, what can I really say about this that hasn't been said already? Mm. But it's perfect. Mm. It's the match that I've probably rewatched so many times. Yeah. The whole thing of the technicality versus, you know, brute force brawl, kind of thing. Yeah. But it's a submission. Well, it's a I Quit match.
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's a submission match. Yeah, that's it. And it's funny, the first time I watched it, given that it was a submission match, I thought it'd be loads of technical wrestling. It's not. Yeah. It's them, you know, beating each other around the arena and that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that the ending with him not giving up, mm-hmm. perfect ending to that.
Because they both come out winners.
Yeah, yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. The pace of it, the crowd are into it. It's by far the best match on that card. And it's so, very different to the sort of stuff that comes before it. Like, it stands out because sometimes it's worth watching the undercard before watching what the standout match is because of the contrast between it. I quite often find that if I watch the, you know, Mick Foley off the top of the Hell in a Cell, that match, if you watch the couple of matches before it on the same show, you realise just how shocking that was because they're kind of standard matches that maybe don't go anywhere or maybe even okay, and then that just is off on a different plane. And it's the same with this. Like, it was one of the... They hadn't, done like live depictions of like lots of sort of blood loss for quite a while as well. And then it's outstanding, and the commentary team sells it so well. Yeah, brilliant.
Okay, this is a really difficult one because I could have gone for any because it's a Bret Hart match, and I was really swaying between Hart versus Michaels, Hart versus Roddy Piper. But I just watched it again tonight to make sure that I did love it still as much as I did. And even though the ending slightly comes out of nowhere, I think even that makes it brilliant. And it's Bret Hart versus British Bulldog SummerSlam 1992.
An 80,355 jam-packing Wembley Stadium to witness the spectacle.
Debbie Boy Smith, you have got to be feeling enormous pressure going into this match for the Intercontinental Championship.
Former Olympic champion Lennox Lewis in the corner. Bulldog.
Is it really?
Yeah.
No way.
I love it. I think it's fantastic. It's home soil for the Bulldog.
Yeah.
I mean, Hart loses. Spoilers. it's for the Intercontinental title. Apparently, they switched the order in America because it was shot in Britain and they showed it a bit later in America, like the next night or the same night, whatever. But they switched the titles. At home, it was Intercontinental title was the last one to show.
Yeah, yeah.
The last Bulldog wins, but they switched it around for Americans because they couldn't bear a British person winning at the end. It's great because they're brother-in-laws. They've got they keep cutting back to the wife, Diana, whoever she is. Brett's his normal surly self. He really plays up to the fact that he's clearly the heel, even though he's not. There was like an interview afterwards, and he said that I realised that I would have to play the heel in this match because there was no way he was going to get cheered.
Yeah, yeah.
And Bulldog pulls it out of nowhere. He went on to an interview, it was either in his book or an interview, where he said that David Boy Smith was pretty much out of it and that he carried that match. I don't believe him. Because he's not out. He's clearly... Maybe he wasn't quite on the same level as Bret Hart, I can believe that.
No, he's clearly on the ball
for
that. I think that's...
So that's a personal... As in, that's a nostalgic, personal thing. It's from my childhood, and I'll remember it very well. It could have been versus Roddy Piper, though, because it was a very similar thing. They were both faces, and Roddy Piper nearly heels out at the end with the He gets the commentator's bell. The timekeeper's bell. Yeah. And he's going to twat him with it. Very similar kind of matches. So, is it? Am I just door wedging in?
No, I don't think so.
Door wedging.
Door wedging in. I was door wedging
making
it
up,
in. Yeah.
Making up some words. Okay, no, it is. It's Bulldog Hart. Yeah.
Brilliant.
1992. Great stuff.
That's interesting that we've both chosen Bret Hart matches.
Of course we have. He's the best. He's the best there ever was, there ever will be, and ever was again.
Hello, Miles here. You're still listening. That's very sweet of you. Thank you very much. Just a quickie. Sorry, the sound for the next 2 minutes went a bit off on the night for some reason. No idea why, but don't worry. It'll soon go back to its, you know, acceptable level very shortly. Thanks. Bye.
What do our lovely listeners think about wrestling?
We asked them, they responded, and they said this. Take it away.
Okay, Jacob Anthony Francis Rolls says, once you understand how physically taxing it is and how much coordination is needed, you gain a new respect for it.
A new respect. Excellent. Alan Graham says, remember as a kid finding out it's all fake, and it has felt just really weird ever since. I can understand that viewpoint, but I think we would discuss why it's a brilliant thing.
Yeah. Okay. Steve O'Brien says,
I'm not, don't read that. He's stolen it from a website, clearly.
He's trolling everyone. I must have, when I first read this, I thought, oh, he knows a lot about wrestling. And then I realised what he was doing. You're a bad man, Steve. I don't know, I've never met you.
Yeah, so Steve's trolled us with some stuff he's nicked off the internet.
Yes.
I don't think he knows anything, but I know he doesn't know anything about wrestling.
Okay. Russell Parker says, I'm with Max von Sydow. How do you pronounce that?
It is Max von Sydow, I'm pretty sure.
In Hannah and Her Sisters on this one. I don't know what he's referring to.
I've seen Hannah and Her Sisters, but I couldn't remember this bit, so I googled it. He says, imagine the mind that loves, that watches wrestling or something like that. He's having a right old moan about thick people, okay. Essentially.
Fair enough.
Yeah, whatever. Tim Riley says, it's just Panto on steroids. Hashtag he's behind you. Yes, it is, and that's why it's great.
Yeah. It's all a matter of perspective. Greg Schofield says, giant haystacks. Saturday afternoons, we're always a lot of fun. Grappling fans.
Yay. Yes. Yeah, that's the old classic British wrestling, which I did watch as a kid, like literally as a, you know, single-digit child, I was watching with my dad. Very, very different, as you can imagine, from the American product. Mm. I mean, well, even then, the American one was a bit slapdash, but nowhere near as just completely wonky as the British version. The British version looked like it was held together with string and tape.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's kind of fun in its day. Now, they did bring it back, of course, beginning of last year.
World of Sport.
Yeah, World of Sport Wrestling. But guess who got involved in bringing it back full time? Impact Wrestling, aka TNA. That's why it fell to pieces and didn't happen.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it's fucking definitely now.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Can't believe they got Jim Ross for that.
Ian Lambert says, can't abide boxing where the violence is real. Can't be bothered with wrestling where the injury can be pretty real. So, still a turn-off. But the script is generally not up to the standard the best theatre has to offer. Generally find the whole thing vaguely unpleasant.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, wrestling scripting isn't... It's not Harold Pinter, as I think Steve mentioned later on.
Yes. Darren Floyd says, bigmeninshinypants.com.
To which James Gent adds, bookmarked.
William Salmon, hello Will.
Hey Will.
Says, not for me, but I legit love boxing.
Didn't take Will as a boxing fan. Perhaps I don't know Will like I thought I did. James Gent says, I liked Mick Foley's autobiography, if that helps.
I read Mick Foley's autobiography, of course I did.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's very interesting.
Ah, might give that a go.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I guess you know, a lot of wrestlers are fairly articulate because you know, they have to do promos and that. But yeah, it's perfectly. It's better than a lot of autobiographies that you get out there, so yeah.
Sure.
Dean Hercombe says, I've got nothing against overly muscled, cuddling in tight spandex don't search for that on Pornhub, but I always find it awkward talking to an adult wrestling fan because all I want to know is, do you think it's real? It's the grown-up equivalent of talking to an 8-year-old about Santa.
Dean, we've discussed this earlier. We know. We know. Now, one day, do you know, when someone says that, I'm going to argue passionately against them that it's not and it's real.
And see what happens.
With the absolute conviction of someone who believes it's all real. Yeah. I've got to do it. Okay, that's my new challenge for 2018.
Okay.
Ryan Hamer says, it's really enjoyable depending on what wrestler is performing, but it's physically challenging.
In a way, that's the perfect response to that, in that he said what wrestler is performing.
Yeah.
Performance. It is a performance.
Yeah, absolutely, it is. I
actually liked the fact that when AJ Styles fought Brock Lesnar recently, Paul Heyman, in his promo, called out that fact that, you know, they constantly say, oh, AJ Styles is the best in-ring performer today. Mm-hmm. And he emphasised the word performer, the implication being that Brock Lesnar can actually hold himself in a fight. And I just thought that was good. The way that they are now acknowledging the fact that people know stuff about wrestling and they're using that to play with it.
As long as they break the fourth wall, as long as they don't smash through it.
There's a
sort of rubber limit, and if you push against too hard, I think you sort of just break it completely. Like fucking, is it not Eric Bischoff? The other one.
Vince Russo.
Vince Russo, I think, was ruinous in a lot of ways. He was so obsessed with smashing the fourth wall and presenting it all as fake and booked. You couldn't believe it anymore. There's none of that grain of truth I was talking about earlier, where you need to just believe in it somewhat.
Yeah.
Fuck that guy. And plus, he's a twat now.
Yeah. Ashley says, fun. I used to feel a real sense of macho, homoerotic belonging when I purchased the glossy magazine from WWF at the beginning of the 90s. Because I didn't have access to Sky TV, it seemed like something glamorous and far away at the time. Like the movie stars of old, wrestlers had a lot of mystique. Louis Theroux wrestling documentary as well, as The Legend of Jake the Snake, a must-sees. I wish I had had more time to watch it back in the day.
Oh, there we are. It's a nice positive reaction. Yeah, I do love that Louis Theroux documentary. That's, of course, based in WCW, which is no longer purchased by WWE.
But, and doesn't he go to a really dodgy local promotion at one point where they...
It's all like thumbtacks and all that kind of shit, yeah. So Tim Riley's just posted a gif of Hogan versus the Warrior from WrestleMania 6.
Yes, the infamous.
Where Warrior's on his knees and it doesn't look healthy. But,
yeah.
Oh dear. Martin,
do you think they realised what they were doing at this
point? No, I really don't.
No.
They're both quite stupid men.
Yeah.
Martin Barrow says, pure pantomime, and the Yanks say they don't understand panto. Oh yes they do. So what you done there, Martin? Like it. And yeah, again, love it. Pantomime, exactly right. Nothing wrong with that.
Ashley also says, it's real, baby, and a picture of what looks like Jake the Snake in a swimming pool.
Or a hot tub.
It's a hot tub, isn't it? Yeah, a jacuzzi. With a cup of tea or probably coffee, knowing.
Nick Blake says it's taken... Why are you obsessing with the liquid in...
I don't know.
Or maybe it's cappuccino. We just don't know.
He could have just swirled out some water from the jacuzzi.
Frothy warm water. Nick Blake says, it's taken very seriously here in Mexico, lucha libre and all that. Can't stand it myself, but whatever floats your boat.
Laura Gail Jones says, staged panto, ridiculous, so bad it's good.
Laura, I suppose that's sort of right. No, it's not right. It's not so bad it's good. It's so good it's great. Laura recently went to a house show over Christmas in New York's Madison Square Garden, the spiritual home of WWE, and sent me photos from it. She was so jealous. She didn't know who anyone was and couldn't have given a fuck.
That's the worst.
Yeah, Laura, you're the worst. Okay, Johnny Edge from the Smooth Traffic podcast says, at its best, great fun. At its worst, really poor. A strange form of entertainment, but you have to admire the athleticism of the wrestlers. The best wrestling storylines have a foundation in real-life situations. CM Punk versus John Cena a few years ago, for example.
Brilliant.
Yeah, thank you. And Russell Parker tried to send a gif of John Pertwee fighting in slow-mo, but he failed.
Oh, dear. I didn't know John Edge was a wrestling fan, but I did have my suspicions. The guys that do the Smooth Traffic podcast,
yeah.
One of them got married and the other two were co-best men. And in the speech, they made a reference to the WWE Women's Championship.
What?
So yeah, it's unless I explain the whole thing, it won't make sense. But right. it worked.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, and I thought, well, that's a very specific reference to make unless you are actually into it. So yeah,
that's incredibly esoteric. Okay, good. Well done him. And then, were they a tag team for the wedding?
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah,
you could. They weren't, but they could. Say.
You could say that. Okay. Right. Should we have some more random questions?
Go for it. I haven't got the answer to any of these.
Okay.
Go on.
Do you have favourite music that's been used in WWE?
I listen actually to a few themes. Mainly my workouts and running and stuff like that, just because it's sort of mostly fast-paced rock music, blah, blah, blah. Okay. I've covered this before in the video games one, but Shinsuke Nakamura's tune. I really like the Shield music and subsequently Roman Reigns' theme, yeah. I mean, I don't love it, it's not great, but I just like it. And Sami Zayn's sort of ska bebop thing, whatever you call that.
Mm. Like that. Okay.
There are plenty of other themes, I'm sure, which I can think of later, but yeah. Those ones spring to my noggin now. Oh, of course, back in the day, I loved him because he was more of an icon than he ever was a wrestler. The Ultimate Warriors. Sort of stupid, fast-paced rock theme. Yeah, in which he'd pelt to the ring, use up all of his energy running around, and have a very basic, slow, lumbering idiot match. Yeah. Who do you like?
I always was the D-Generation X music. I really liked it, and I really loved it when it got played live for Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 14.
Okay.
This was the thing that was unique about DX was I thought to have a long teasing intro before we get to the music. I worked with Chris Warren, the singer, who did such a great job. I didn't know what I wanted it to be. Just to have something while I was working with Chris in the studio, right here, as a matter of fact.
Hey, you think you can tell us what to do? You think you can tell us what to wear? You think that you're better?
Yeah, I just thought that was very, you know, that guy's vocal style was very similar to like Rage Against the Machine sort of thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just thought it was a good song. Recently, I've really got into Edge's, this sort of last theme tune.
Oh, right, yeah.
Actually isn't. It wasn't a Jim Johnston thing. It's by the band Alter Bridge. And it's just one of their songs, which they sort of appropriated for it.
Oh, okay. I like that. On this day, I see clearly.
Yeah, so yeah, those I really like before it changed to having guitars in it. Bret Hart's original theme music had like synthesizer bits. Like it sounded almost like video game music.
Very Jim Johnston.
That's brilliant.
I also, of course, love Bobby Roode's "Glorious." Glorious, no, I won't give in. I won't give in till I'm
victorious, and I will defend. Oh, that's so good.
It's just tremendous.
That is so good.
I watched the making of it with, I don't know what they're called, CFO. The two guys, basically, who write all the themes now, since Jim Johnson's been sacked and let go. They basically said they wanted to create the ultimate Muse Queen song.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think they succeeded in completely.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
That NXT match, Nakamura versus Roode. It's just brilliant because you get to hear both of
those.
Both of
the themes, yeah.
Yeah.
The battle of the themes.
Yeah. Do you have someone that you would consider an underrated wrestler?
Well, they're not underrated anymore, and it's not really his wrestling, but The Miz. Because he just got Wrestler of the Year, didn't he? By, was it like Rolling Stone or someone off like that?
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's because his character work is so fantastic. Yeah. At least now, because he used to bore the tits off me.
When he had his championship run, could not stand the guy. No. And now, he's really interesting.
Yeah, he's brilliant. What a great Intercontinental Champion. Mm. Yeah, maybe him, just on that basis. But I can't think of anyone who's the whole package in this continent. Actually, I know exactly who it is. Rusev.
Oh, yeah?
Rusev is such fun.
Yeah.
He's great. He's funny. He's threatening when he needs to be. He's really good in the ring, and he's got a hell of a lot of athleticism. He's had some great matches, especially with Roman Reigns, and I used to love the way he used to beat the fuck out of little... What's he called? Enzo. That was great. Yeah. Yeah, more of that, please. Because I hate Enzo. Yeah, and he just doesn't seem to be given a push. He's never really... He's won the US title, hasn't he? I don't think he's won any others, so maybe him.
Okay.
How about you?
Mine is undoubtedly Dean Malenko.
Oh, okay. What happened to him?
He became a trainer for a while.
And then, I like the Red Rooster.
And then a road manager or something like that. I think he has still got a job with WWE. But he's just, to look up any of his matches, it'll be really good.
Yeah.
He's so good. He's, you know, when he was in WCW, they gave him... His moniker was Man of a Thousand Holds.
Right.
And he does just such different matches each time, like different moves he's putting out. He's seen to do something he's never done before. Yeah, very sort of fast-paced technical wrestler. Never got any good storylines or anything like that. But yeah, and again, his WWE run only lasted about 18 months. All of his best stuff is done in WCW and ECW.
ECW, yeah.
And before that, which I haven't seen any of. Like, he's I think he's quite an old guy. Like, he was old when he... But yeah, he is superb and really consistent.
Yeah. Like, I guess in that sense, Cody Rhodes.
Yeah.
Who left because he felt he wasn't being pushed and wasn't being put into decent spots and all that. And now, of course, he's pretty much shown them that he can be a major force on the indie scene, and perhaps even, you know, one day he'll go back to WWE, and he's really accruing a huge following now, especially from the, you know, the internet wrestling community.
I love what they say about Cody Rhodes managed to finally get over by growing a mustache. Do you have a favourite storyline?
What's yours, and I'll tell you mine in a minute.
Okay, mine is Kane is alive. Oh. The build up to the match at Mania with the Undertaker. Yeah, it was that sort of slow build of storyline. They didn't face each other in a ring for that storyline was going on for about 9 months before they had a match to do anything with it. And can you imagine that happening these days? Having a 9 month build up to a match, and they just sort of drip fed it through Raw, and then Kane appeared at that Hell in a Cell with Shawn and that, and then. Yeah, I just thought it was brilliant. Almost all of it was told through the mouthpiece of Paul Bearer as well, who I find utterly hilarious. How did Undertaker not burst out laughing for 10 years?
Yeah.
Like, and he's going to stand there while Paul Bearer's going, oh, yeah!
It's a very good Paul Bearer. Yeah, I guess that's why he was so successful, because he didn't react to anything. He didn't react to being set on fire. You're not going to react to fucking Paul Bearer with his histrionics. Yeah, I'm going to go for then, it's not really my favourite storyline, it's just an old one I remember that I liked at the time, because they put a bit of effort into it, is, that's good too. Shane Roberts was really something back in the day, when he was blinded by the model Rick Martel, by spraying his cologne right in his eye. That was great back in the day, because he had to wear a contact lens which covered up his entire pupil and his iris, so he just had a white eye. He ripped off the bandages to show, this is what you did to my goddamn eye. And he had no eye there. Which is, obviously, medically, that's impossible. That's not going to happen. You don't get rid of the actual eye. But at the time, we were like, shit. Really fucked him over. And then they had like a blindfold, mate. It ended up in a blindfold match. Which, for the time, was a novelty. And it never really happened. And it was amazing. And the audience, of course, helped. Because like Jake would point and go, where is he? And they go, yay, all that cold, he's warm over there. And then you get him and find DDT, all done. That's great. So I'm going to go for that.
I've written down best booking and worst booking. I don't know if you've got any thoughts along those lines.
Got any new show?
Well, My best booking I put down, Brock Lesnar ending the Undertaker streak, was brilliant.
Yeah.
In because it adds a certain legitimacy to the rest of it, rather than just, oh, the Undertaker's going to win at WrestleMania. And that, the crowd reaction, brilliant.
Well, that Undertaker reaction guy.
Yeah, yeah, that.
He's now internet famous.
Yeah. Well, he's not the only one. They're
just for gasping.
And the way they did it, like, they counted, and then there's just nothing. They don't play his music straight away. That's one of the best things about it.
Yeah.
They wait about a minute and a half before playing his music, and while everyone's just in disbelief.
A third and five to the Undertaker! Brock Lesnar into the cover! Hugs the leg! The streak is over!
I liked it when Daniel Bryan won the title. Who the fuck did he win it from? Cena. Yeah, he won it from John Cena.
Yeah.
And it was this big hooray moment, amazing.
Yeah.
Triple H was the referee.
Yeah.
Then, of course, he kicked him, did the
pedigrees in,
calls out Randy Orton. But I think that was great because it gave everyone what they wanted and then took it right away again.
Yeah.
I'm going with that. That was amazing. And it made me, who wasn't even watching at the time, gutted.
It is a good booking because even like I was watching it and I knew and I still, and it was one of those moments where I was going, oh, don't do that to him. And that's what, if that's what more can you want from wrestling, to get that reaction out of
an emotional response from it. Yeah, great. I'm definitely going for that. Yeah, that was
that was great.
Yeah.
Worst booking, there's probably quite a lot more material for this one.
There's tons.
I'll tell you what I've gone with is it's actually kind of related to yours. It's Batista winning the 2014 Royal Rumble.
Oh, that is, was the second to last person there, Reigns.
Yeah. And they're actually legitimately cheering for Roman Reigns because no one wanted Batista to win, and they still went through with it. And then the next year, Roman wins.
Yeah.
And no one wants him to. He's already gone round to that stage.
He got out the Big Show, and was it the Big Show in like Kane or something like that?
I can't remember. I can't remember who it was. Yeah.
Because that was the year that Brian. Everyone wanted Brian to
and he,
win.
Yeah, he...
He didn't.
Yeah.
He was out fairly soon.
He was in it, and then got knocked out.
Yeah.
And then the next person out was Goldust.
And it's a shattered dreams.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's got to be management.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Piss.
Yeah.
Okay, worst booking, okay, I'm going to go for then, which is a bit of a weird one, because it's not worst booking, but... is the 92 Rumble you talked about earlier.
Oh, okay.
But it's not because of Flair winning. That's great. It's Hogan who got pulled out by... Yeah, Sid Justice, or Sid Vicious, whatever he was called then. And then Hero Hogan, the face, goes and fucking pulls out Sid Justice, having the temerity to kick him out in the first place.
Yeah.
You're like, you're supposed to be the face.
Yeah.
He's such a heel. There were legitimate boos on that night, and of course Vince had the audio tweet, and then he had the he had Gorilla Monsoon change his commentary.
Really?
Yeah, because
no way.
It was sort of on the side of Sin Justice, because it's fair and above board that you should. I just fucking hate Hogan.
I didn't know that about it. They'd revised it.
Yeah.
Also, I feel like it kind of, I know that Flair was in an odd position in the company at that time, but it, again, with so much with Hogan, it makes it all about him, and it kind of takes it away from that being Flair's victory. Although, like I say, you made up for it with that promo at the end.
So I meant to say, that was another thing I loved about that sometime 92 match with Bulldog and Brett, is that you've got Vince on commentary, which I'm not a massive fan of. But you've got Heenan as well, and he's being very, very good. And he's talking about Bulldog's hair, because he's got his braids.
Oh, yeah.
He's like Whoopi Goldberg doing his hair.
So we've got the Royal Rumble coming up.
Rumble's coming up.
2018. Any thoughts, predictions?
Oh, God knows it could go anywhere.
So throughout the whole year, what everyone's been expecting is for Roman Reigns to win the Rumble and then go on to face Brock Lesnar and defeat him, because no one's kicked out of an F5 for a year, etc.
Even Strowman.
Yeah.
One F5 he's done.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
However, now they've put the Intercontinental belt on Roman.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that has the whole year just been deliberate misinformation?
I'd hope so.
Yeah.
Because I really like Roman Reigns, and I don't think I think he works in a upper mid card.
Yeah.
He does work as a main eventer totally, but the crowd are never going to give him that. So I think, you know, let him work in a slightly less elevated position.
Yeah.
He will eventually get, and he is getting cheered now.
Yeah.
Beyond expectation. Just keep him there for a time being. Although I thought Joe would win the other day because he fought Samoa Joe recently and he beat Joe clean, which I did not expect at all. It was only one spear and down. I don't know. I'm thinking maybe the winner of the Rumble goes on to face whoever owns the WWE title and the Universal title is decided by Elimination Chamber or something. I don't know.
They could do it that way. In which case, what I would want to see at Mania is Nakamura and Styles.
Yeah, I hope they're going to work towards that. That'd be amazing. So Nakamura wins the Rumble, you reckon?
So yeah, Nakamura wins the Rumble, goes on to face Styles for the belt at Mania. Wouldn't care who wins.
No.
Yeah.
That's very indie pleasing, isn't it? That's very internet fan pleasing as well, isn't it?
Which makes me think they're not going to do it.
No. Yeah. Oh God, what if it's someone like? Well, it's not going to be Kane, is it? We've also got the three.
Triple threat for the Universal title, Brock Lesnar, Kane and Braun Strowman. Well, so what's going on with this? Because it's supposed to be Finn Balor was supposed to be Brock Lesnar's opponent at the Rumble. And they pulled him out of that.
Backstage rumours he's not over enough, says Vince. Because they make him fucking lose.
Well, yeah.
To Kane.
Yeah.
So now he's back with the club. So it's him and Gallus Anderson being a sort of stable, if you like. Because Emma's off sick. And now Seth Rollins and Jason Jordan are the tag champions. That's weird.
Yeah.
But I guess it's to set up for Dean coming back and being jealous or something, and then he'll turn maybe.
Are they going to do? Do you reckon they do? No, because they've already done. They did a run of Seth Rollins versus Dean Ambrose a couple of years back.
Yeah, they might do it again the other way around now that Seth's the heel, Seth's the face, and Dean might be the heel. I don't know.
But yeah, in terms of the, I mean, Lesnar's obviously going to retain.
Yeah,
but Rumble. I don't know. Reckon how.
I think they're putting Kane in there to take the fall to protect Strowman.
Right. Okay.
Because he's only been beaten by Lesnar.
Kane's got not going to be far off retirement.
Oh, he must be retired. Isn't he going to be a governor or something?
Well, he's standing for it. I don't know. I mean, did he win? I don't know how that works.
No idea.
Okay.
Glenn Jacobs. Yeah. Someone held up a sign.
Isaac Yankum.
Someone held up a sign recently. Whenever he got into the ring, it said, "Haven't you got governing to do?" Or something. Or, "Haven't you got governor stuff to do?"
have you got a favourite crowd sign?
Well, I was watching that street fight tonight. Him and Shawn Michaels. When Triple H walked in, someone held a big sign that said "Pork."
I love signs like that.
That took me off guard. I like that.
I got most of mine are really recent actually. Like I did, particularly liked Roman as a Holocaust denier from WrestleMania 33, and because they're in the context of it being potentially the Undertaker's last match, it then seems even more inappropriate than it should do. I do like I like ones which come up to say, you know, sort of post-internet age ones that have got a sense of ridiculousness, like "You're the heel, boo," or something like that. You know,
that's good.
Roman is a wank pheasant.
Roman is a wank pheasant is brilliant. Who's going to win the women's Rumble?
Right, I got two trains of thought about this because what I would love to see is Asuka versus Charlotte at Mania. If they could arrange, you know, engineer that in some way.
I
would have thought Asuka to win the Royal Rumble, but I'm slightly concerned that I've got a feeling that Ronda Rousey's going to do something.
A lot of people say it's going to
be Rousey. So is she going to drop in as number 30 and win it, and then her do something with presumably Charlotte? I don't know.
Asuka is the wrestling fan's choice, but Rousey is going to be the public thing because that will bring in interest, that will bring in the buy, I suppose. Do they still sell it as a pay-per-view on any medium, or is it all network-based? I guess it must be network.
I thought it was a mixture, because I thought they still talk about buy rates and that, and the fact that, I think what they say happens is a lot of people subscribe to network between January and April that don't for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Because that's their kind of killer season.
Rumble to
But I guess also they can sell WrestleMania in particular to companies like Sky Sports or whatever, that kind of
thing. Right, actually, because I remember seeing Battleground being sold, and I was thinking, you can't sell me that piece of shit. Was that, I think that was the Indian Death Match, whatever the fuck it's called.
Punjabi Prison Match. Yeah,
yeah. Indian that, Death Match. That's what I like to call
that. That was the worst pay-per-view this year.
Absolute nadir of wrestling this year, yeah. I felt pissed off that I had to watch, well, I didn't have to watch it.
No.
I was watching it. Right, we've gone on for nearly 2 hours now.
Oh my
God. I think we should just quit while we're being pinned.
Okay.
Okay, well, thank you ever so much for listening, if you still are. Chances are against it. Yeah. We probably do.
Yeah, yeah, I'll listen to it all back.
Okay, we'll be back with a proper podcast at some point. From me, though, it's a brawl to the back, and for Kit...
rake across the eyes.
Rake in it. What is that?
I don't know.
Nor do I. Keep styling and profiling. Thank you very much for listening. We love you. Mwah.
Bye.